Okay, should we start?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Welcome back to another episode of the Hell Money Podcast. I am your host, Casey Rodemore, with my co-host, Aaron Boop.
I didn't censor it when you did it last time.
Okay, yeah.
I just let them hear it.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like it's like an Easter egg.
Okay, know? Yeah, right. Okay.
Like whoever listens to the podcast, like, gets to know my name.
Getting doxxed is an Easter egg.
Yeah. exactly. I mean, I feel like I just want to slowly, gradually undox, but not like too much at once.
Right, okay.
To not like derail my life.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm here with my co-host, Aaron Boop, who's a boop at the boop of boop, working on boop.
So you'll have to listen to other episodes to find out those details.
Yeah, fill in the puzzle pieces. You know what I mean? Pieces.
That's it's enough of like a treasure
lore,
hunt.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
Totally. Welcome back.
Yep, welcome back.
Today we've got a variety of topics.
Yeah, variety. Grab bag.
Little vibe check, astrology, science.
Yep.
Just all the good things. First, we have some announcements, though. Casey, do you want to start?
Yeah, they're ordinal-related announcements.
We've got ordinal-related announcements.
For those who don't know, ordinals are a numeric namespace for Bitcoin. They are a system where you assign serial numbers, ordinal numbers, to every single Satoshi in the order that it was mined. And then you can pinpoint where these Satoshis are in the blockchain, in the Bitcoin blockchain specifically. It's not a token. It's not a second layer. It doesn't require any changes to Bitcoin. This is weird little thing, you know, that I cooked up. So very boring topic, very boring announcement, which is that the ordinal sync is now much, much faster.
Oh, why?
Yeah. We just did a lot of optimization. Thanks to Ulrich Kallmeyer, who is one of the collaborators on the project. He just did some deep diving into the patterns of UTXOs on Bitcoin being created and spent. His big insight was that it turns out that actually a huge number of UTXOs are spent the first block after, in the same block as they're created. So a transaction creates an output and it's spent in that block for 20% of transaction outputs.
Oh, wow. Hmm.
Yeah. And I'm not kind of sure what that is due to. That strikes me as quite a bit. I would have thought that it was less. Lesser are created and spent in the same block. And then once you get up to like, I think like 18 blocks maybe, 60% of UTXOs are created and spent within 18 blocks. Hmm. So it seems like there's a lot of high frequency activity on Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And he exploited that to add a fast in-memory cache that we check for UTXOs when we're building the database. And this means that we don't have to go to the big, expensive, slow on-disk database so often, which is a big, big win.
Congratulations. So how long does it take now? It used to take like a day, right?
Yeah, it used to take 28 hours and we've gotten it down to like 11 hours.
Wow.
50 minutes, I think.
Cool.
Yep. And I think we can actually get it to go a bit faster than that. There's still more low-hanging fruit. So our goal is to get it down to below 8 hours so that you like start it when you go to bed and when you wake up, it's done.
Wow.
That would be super nice.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you. there also is a new Ord wallet command, Ord wallet send.
Okay.
Actually lets you construct transactions that will send a specific ordinal in your wallet to another person.
I thought you could do that already. Or was it just you had a wallet that knows what ordinals are?
You kind of could do it already, but it was very manual. You had to like craft these transactions by hand using weird command line tools that aren't very user friendly.
I see.
Yep. And now anybody can just say, okay, ordinal like 25991321. I want to send it to Bob, whose address is XYZ. And then the Ordinal wallet will lovingly create a transaction where the inputs and outputs are ordered such that the ordinal that you want to get to its destination is sent to its destination.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was pretty hard. So I'm not going to lie. There was a lot of things. It's really easy to fat finger ordinals into the void.
Mm.
So a lot of things to check for and lots of tricky edge cases.
Right.
Yeah. And this wallet, Ord wallet send command, will also let you participate in Ordinal Bounty 3.
Okay.
Yep. So Ordinal Bounty 3 is for a total of 400,000 sats. It has two parts, one that's 200,000 sats and another that's, again, 200,000 sats.
Mm-hmm.
I made a word list of words and their frequency in the Google Books corpus. So like Google has this like book scanning thing. They scan books, mm-hmm. you know, Google Books. And they're destructively scanned. So it's easier to like tear them apart as you're scanning them on these machines. So it's like it's a hellscape of books being ripped
apart.
There's
some sort of poetic something there,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So they made they have a list of all the words that appear in these books, mm-hmm, that are there billions of them, maybe not billions of them, and how often they appear. And so I built a word frequency list of all of the ordinal, all of the words which are also valid ordinals.
So like 10 till 11 letters in length.
Yeah. 10. They're all 11 characters in length. So ordinals. Okay. Ordinals.
Oh,
are
right. The sleepiest ordinal drops November 2023. So that'll be the first.
I'm impressed that you know that. Yeah.
Listen, I'm planning a party.
Yeah. So the ordinals are numbers, but then there's also a mapping from numbers to names, which are just strings of the characters A through Z.
Yeah. So when I say sleepiest ordinal, I mean that it's the first ordinal that's Z, 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 whatever, 10 Z's.
Yeah.
Because there's no 11 Z's.
No. Yeah.
But there is 10 Z's.
Right.
And that'll be the first 10 letter, 10 character ordinal.
That's right.
Which drops in November.
Yep.
I'm planning a slumber party.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah,
pajama party, slumber party for the sleepiest ordinal.
I love it. Yeah. That sounds great. So the bounties are one half of the bounty is to submit an ordinal to the submission address, mm-hmm, that is the most common word on the list. So there's like a 5-week period, two and a half difficulty adjustment periods when the bounty is open. And the person who during that time submits the most common word wins 200,000 sats.
Hmm.
And then also the other half of the bounty is the person who submits the least common word.
Oh, well, yeah. So that still has to be a word.
Still has to be a word on that list. Yeah, okay. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. And the reason I did that originally, I was going to make it, you just have to submit the most common word.
Right.
But it turns out that most common words are incredibly boring. They're like information. And like development and like all these really staid, boring words.
I mean, I would love to have the information ordinal.
I mean, yeah, that's a flex.
That
obviously is
absolutely
that's
a flex.
Yeah. But if you look at the other end of the list at the uncommon words,
they're more fun.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah,
they're
right.
Heresies and like crazy one-time coinages that somebody made, you know?
Okay, that is fun.
Yeah, the
like
the long tail.
Hyper-normalization.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Maybe I'll try to participate in the ordinal bounty.
It's pretty hard.
Yeah. I don't
know.
No,
actually, for the
words.
Audience listening at home, it's not that hard.
Everyone can
try. Yeah.
Anyone has ordinals.
Yeah. So basically, you need a Bitcoin Core wallet. You need to have Bitcoin Core synced on your computer.
Right.
Which we did an episode where we sunk a Bitcoin Core node.
You can watch that one if you need to learn how for ordinal bounty 3.
Yep. And then you run the Ord wallet. And you can use Ord wallet identify to tell you about. Mm. What ordinals are in your wallet. And so, yeah, all the details, if you go to docs.ordinal.com or you go to ordinals.com and click on the docs link, that has all the bounties listed there.
And that's DOCS.
DOCS.
Not where you dox everyone and their ordinals.
No.
The list where you just keep everyone who's ever submitted an ordinal and you dox them. I'm just kidding. Sorry. I'm doing propaganda against ordinals right now.
That's right. I mean, propaganda against ordinals is going to come.
Yeah.
Like once ordinal arts starts taking up a significant percentage of Bitcoin blocks.
Yeah.
Then things are going to get really spicy.
Yeah. Are you ready? Not yet.
Yeah, no, I think so. I'm getting into the like all publicity is good publicity.
Mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was one time where you said something in an episode where you were joking and you said like, I'm using ordinals to blah, blah, blah. I don't remember, but I was like, oh, I'll remember this someday for like when it gets clipped for like, look, he's admitting it.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, someday.
Yeah.
But, you know, for today, you just dox me on the pod and maybe two or three people figure out who I am and, you know, we live our lives unperturbed.
Yeah.
Is that all for ordinals?
Yeah, that's all for ordinals.
Okay, well, participate in Ordinal Bounty 3.
Ordinal Bounty 3, ordinals.com. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next announcement. We will be at PAC Bitcoin next week.
That's right.
Yeah, this episode goes up, I don't know, Wednesday, Thursday, something like that. And then the week after, like a week later, we're flying to LA. Mm-hmm. And we're actually attending PAC Bitcoin.
Yeah, we bought tickets
to
PAC
tickets.
Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Or you managed.
We have tickets to PAC Bitcoin.
We have tickets to PAC Bitcoin that we obtained in totally normal, legal ways.
That is true. But yeah, I'm media personnel.
Yeah. For the first time, this is a step up, right?
I know.
This is our first, like, I feel like this is our first, like Hell Money podcast freebie that we've like obtained.
Yeah. Just me, not you.
Not me. No, I'm not. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for not asking for two media passes.
I actually did.
For your best buddy, Casey.
I actually did, because I sent in a request and I was like, hey, me and my podcast host. And then they were like, we don't give a shit about you. Mm. And then it took more nudging for them to give a shit about me. But only me, not you. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
You already had a ticket at that
point. I can
exist
in your shadow.
Yeah. I mean, I exist in your shadow in other ways, you know? So I can be the media person and you can just be the Ordinals guy.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Someday you'll be like VIP whale, whatever, and I'll be media.
I'm never paying for a whale ticket.
You were a whale at Bitcoin Miami this last year.
Yeah, so maybe no episode next week.
Yeah, maybe no episode next week, because we're just gonna, you know, we're traveling. First skipped episode.
Yep. Feel kind of bad. It's like a 20 episode.
Longer than
23 episode streak.
It's hard.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard, but I'm hoping that we'll come out of Pack Bitcoin with a bunch of good interviews. Mm-hmm. So that'll make up for it. And yeah, if you're gonna be at Pack Bitcoin, if you're gonna be in LA, hit us up.
Yep.
Yeah, we're down to hang. We're just going to get the West Coast Bitcoiner vibes.
Yep.
Cool. Is that all our announcements?
Yeah.
Okay.
So starting with sort of the vibe check.
Yeah, this is a vibe check episode.
Well, I mean, there's the Ethereum censorship, which I feel like we should talk about.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is part of the vibe check episode.
Yeah. I mean, everything on the agenda is basically a vibe check.
Yep. So Ethereum, if you look at recent Ethereum blocks, 65% of them are censored. Are OFAC compliant.
So what does that mean?
Yeah, so what that means is that, I forget what the OFAC is. I believe it stands for the Office of Foreign Asset Control, something like that. And they are a U.S. federal government agency that puts out blacklists of people, individuals, countries, and companies that are forbidden to interact with. Mm-hmm. And among other things, they also publish some Ethereum addresses of people that you're not allowed to interact with. And they're the government agency, I believe, that designated the Tornado Cash Ethereum mixing contract as being forbidden to interact with.
Yeah.
So Ethereum has this thing called MEV, which is miner extractable value. Mm-hmm. And MEV is the amount of money that miners can make by gaming the order of transactions in a block, right? Like if they see you making a purchase on a DeFi, you know, market maker, they can front run you, and they can buy what you were buying before you buy it with a good price, with a better price than you would buy it. So then they sell it to you and you wind up paying more, and they sort of get some of your profit. They skim some of your profit. And there is it's hard to look for MEV opportunities. So there is a relay which produces sort of blocks for miners to accept called MEV Boost. Mm. And MEV Boost is incredibly successful, and they produce like 65% of the blocks that are accepted that Ethereum validators mine, I guess they're not mined anymore, that they validate or that they produce, mm-hmm. come from the MEV Boost relay, mm-hmm. because it gives people the best opportunity, the best allows miners to make the most MEV.
Sure.
And these relays, MEV Boost and a few others, are OFAC compliant.
Okay.
They will not include OFAC banned transactions in the blocks that they give to miners.
Why is that? Like, is that because they're like, guys, we really don't want to do, like, what is their reasoning? Because that seems like something that would be really unpopular for one sort of entity to make.
Yeah. Like, I don't exactly know what the reasoning is. I think that they believe maybe that they have to.
Right.
I believe that they're like a VC backed company.
Okay.
And they probably, via talking to their lawyers, have been told that their relay can't produce these candidate blocks that contain banned OFAC transactions, and so they don't.
Okay, so it's a product of like the service that they're offering makes it more profitable for like whatever, not miners, but whoever
validators,
Ethereum
validators
to validate, And so they use this service, but the service sort of has this like centralizing effect because it's like, if you use this service, then it's like one point of them just to be like, well, it's like not really financially viable for us to do this. Like they're an easy target, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And what do the Ethereans think about this? Nothing?
They're surprisingly mute, I would say.
Surprisingly mute. I think they're always mute. Like I feel like I never really
This was big for me to see. Like I was surprised at how bad it had gotten. Like looking
very
at the
fast.
Yeah. 65% of blocks being censored. Like the reason why I say surprisingly mute is because if this was happening on Bitcoin, my opinion would be that Bitcoin was in the process of failing. Like Bitcoin is failing, and if this gets worse, Bitcoin will have failed, and this is a crisis that must be averted.
I can't remember what my friend Caroline, she did like a whole astrological analysis of the Ethereum merge, and I'm pretty sure she thought that Ethereum was like pretty much over by December.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I was like, I don't know how long it's going to take for like this to actually matter, and she was like, merge astrology is not looking good.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so maybe the timeline is continuing according to astrological analysis.
It's pretty wild. I can't believe it's this bad. And we've sort of been going to some like NFT Web3 events to like check out the vibes on the other side.
We're vibe checking all over the place.
Yeah. And I don't think I've talked to anybody who said anything about it.
I was drunk. And did you remember when I was drunkenly talking to that guy about it? I don't know.
Which event?
The like Halloween party on Saturday. There was some guy. Oh
yeah. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember.
I don't remember what was going on, but I was like trying to explain to him. I was like, it doesn't have the power to resist censorship. Mm-hmm. And like, he was kind of being like, oh, I don't really think about that kind of thing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly how that conversation went, but I just remember him being like, not unconvinced by my argument, but kind of just like not really understanding why I was like autistically spewing like things about censorship to him. Like, I think he was just kind of like, why does this like matter? And I was sort of being like, well, then what's even the point of what's happening right now? Like, what is, but it's like, I guess we were at a fucking NFT Halloween party. So I should have known.
Honestly, though, that's kind of the general attitude that I've found among people in Ethereum and Web3. They're very much driven by incentives. Everybody's kind of driven by different incentives. And the incentives of people in Web3 and Ethereum are to work for VC-backed startups that dump tokens on retail. And so nobody's telling them, like, listen, you need to be super censorship resistant. They're telling them like, you need to make something really shiny and really confusing so that people will buy it. And any flaws in the system, especially flaws in decentralization, you just need to paper over and ignore.
Yeah.
And a lot of things are like that. Like, I mean, you know, optimism, a lot of Ethereum rollups, they're still single points of failure. Like there's one key that's like the contract upgrade key. And, you know, the huge amounts of money essentially in these like centralized choke points, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think they just don't think about that because that's not really where the money or the social cred is pointing them to.
Yeah.
The social cred is just coming up with like complicated moon math that doesn't work.
I mean, the social cred feels a little bit devoid, honestly. I mean, as you said, we NFT San Francisco was this last weekend.
Yep.
And, we did not get tickets to that, obviously. We're not about to pay money for that. But we did go to free side events and other side events. And it was mostly, I was just curious, like, what is NFT land like now in like a bear market? And I do just feel like it's not even that like the vibes are like they're like, woo, like Great Gatsby, like 20s partying, even though like the Great Recession is about. It's like, it feels like it's just over kind of, and it's not very much excitement in the situation in general.
Yeah. We didn't go to the event. I'm curious what the event was like, but the side parties didn't have much like juice.
No,
you know,
no. And it was like a Saturday. Like it should have been like, if there was a night for it to be like, okay, yeah, like let's party. We love NFTs. Yeah.
Did we just pick the wrong parties to go to?
I don't think so. I think, okay. Well, so like that night. So the story of that night, which I wrote in my notes, NFTSF/San Francisco vibe check. It was a vibe check on both NFTs and San Francisco. So we were like, okay, let's go to these events. Like Saturday night, there were like a couple in a row. we were like, let's show up, like, and just like see what the deal is and see what people are thinking about and like get a sense for like, what are people even like doing here? And we go to the first event and it's like a NFT art gallery and there's like a line outside. We showed up like 30 minutes after it was supposed to start, or maybe even an hour after it was supposed to start. And we were like, what's going on? And they're like, oh, they're having technical difficulties. Like they're not letting anyone in until they like figure out the technical difficulties. And Casey like walks up to the window to look in and they're like screwing screens onto like a mount.
Literally like, just like screwing a screen mount, like the kind of mount like that you would TV. See. Yeah, like a TV mount for displaying things in the gallery. And I assumed, I saw that and I was like, wow, there must be like 20 of these mounts that there must be a lot of these mounts that they're like screwing together. Like, okay, this is going to take a while. Right. Yeah. So we left.
Well, okay. So like, also it's like, it's funny because it's like, if it was just an art gallery, like not an NFT gallery, but just like print out the NFT, like that would have just been like set up. You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. like the fact that they needed to like screw on all the screens to the mounts, like it's like, that is like the essence of what an NFT, like how the fact that they can't physically display NFTs like on time in an art gallery opening is like,
yeah, a little problematic.
Yeah. So then we leave. We're like, okay, this doesn't seem like whatever. Like we're not going to wait out here. Let's just like go get like food or like a drink somewhere. And we're in the Tenderloin of San Francisco. So it's rough out here.
Tenderloin market area.
Halloween weekend. Yeah. Middle of eclipse season. Saturday night. It's getting dark out. We start walking to just like, you know, whatever. We're looking on like Google Maps and just being like, okay, we can go to this place. It's open. So we walked probably like 3 or 4 blocks, maybe not that far. I saw at least 3 human feces.
Yeah. Like, or Hufies, as I like to call it.
Hufies.
3 dodging Hufies left and right.
Like, we literally were. I was being like, oh, careful. Like, don't sit there. Like, it was so much just.
It was pretty apocalyptic.
It was very apocalyptic. Obviously, like people are just like milling around, like drugged out on the street, and we're just like, damn, okay. And we like pull up to whatever the place that we had found, and they're like, do you have a reservation? And I'm like, there's literally human feces out on the street, and you're asking us if we have a reservation? Like, no, we don't have a fucking reservation. We get in, and it's like a totally, like, it's like an isolated vibe. Like, mm-hmm. it's like, out on the street, there's like 200 people like just milling around,
being high.
Yeah, being high,
smearing the shit around.
Literally. And then inside is like this weird, like manufactured, like service lounge experience. Mm-hmm. Everything was so wildly fucking expensive. Like the cocktails were like $20-something. Like,
yeah. Cocktail was really good though.
It was really good. It was very
Giuseppe.
Good.
It was pretty good. It was good. Had a bitter Giuseppe.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we go back to whatever. Yeah. That experience is what it is. That's San Francisco. Like that is like just what San Francisco fucking is. And we go back to the NFT event and they're open and there's like 10 people, like 10 people or less in there. And there's just 2 screens.
Yeah. There's 2 screens. It took them literally like an hour and a half to screw together 2 screens and to put 2 monitors on those like screwed together screen mounts that just sort of displayed a rotating
like a slideshow
set of shitty NFTs that they weren't even touchscreens. And they had what looked like giant touchscreen controls.
They had like, it was like, it wasn't even like full screened. It was like, you could still see like the like kind of,
the whatever. Navigation bar.
And like Casey like tried to like click X and it was like just not a touch screen. It was bad.
Extremely strong NGMI vibe.
Extremely. That's why I say like, it's not even like the Ethereum people feel like they're like not paying attention. It's like, they're just, I don't know. I think maybe they're just like in hiding.
Yeah.
Or like retreated.
Well, NFTs are really
hurt by the bear market. Yeah, marginalized community in this bear market.
Like, I mean, I think that the OpenSea volume is down like 99%. Yeah. But you know, one nice thing is I think artists will keep NFTs going. Yeah. Because artists are used to, for a long time, making art and not getting paid.
Yeah.
And so they were getting paid with NFTs. And even if they are, once again, not getting paid, that's just back to the status quo. Right. And they'll still be like out here, making their NFTs and like making art and like selling it to like a small group of of collectors.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the artist that we talked to was like probably my favorite person we talked to.
He was very chill. Yeah. Seemed very normal.
Very chill, very normal. Also very like upfront and honest, like just kind of being like, yeah, I don't really know what the deal is with this. I just like, you know, I do, he makes digital art too. So he's like, it's a logical thing for me to do. And I just wanted to use whatever platform is like the easiest with like a market that's available to me, mm-hmm. you know, which feels like the most just like honest answer in the NFT world to get, mm-hmm. as opposed to people being like, this is the future. Someday you're going to be buying your hat for the metaverse mm-hmm. with my NFTs, yep. you know?
Yep.
I don't know. Is it like, then we went to a party and I, yeah, whatever. It
was party, just... which was the Bay Area Apes, which are, they're these sort of like, they're not, they don't look exactly like Bored Ape Club, but they're clearly inspired by Bored Ape Club.
Yeah.
They're like sort of Bay Area, like hip hop and sports apes.
Yeah.
And they're maybe the shittiest, like cringiest.
They were so nice.
They were lovely. They were lunch so lovely.
They're but entrepreneurs.
The apes are very cringy. Extreme levels of cringe.
Well, I didn't connect the dots that it was interesting. Like they used these NFTs as like a way of like establishing status in like a club.
Right.
Like you like have this NFT and you get like these privileges, like bottle service at right. the club.
It's which, basically a way of conferring hot girl status
right.
on lame guys.
Yeah.
Which we've said it before. Like this is the holy grail of NFTs.
100%.
If you can confer hot girl status on like lame men, you've cracked that nut.
But this is a code that I don't think NFTs can crack. Like, what do you need an NFT? Because then afterward, I talked to this guy and I was like, oh, he's so nice. He's like, well-meaning. Like, you know, he's just trying to do it. He's like, we want to start a club. We, you know, he wants to, I guess this is the whole thing with the Web3 people. They have this like vision that's like not necessarily like hellish or bad. Mm-hmm. It just is sort of like, I don't know. I left that conversation being like, that guy's nice. Like, whatever. And then I kind of was like, but why is this an NFT at all?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why not just like have a list?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. What is even the reason to have it be an NFT?
I think maybe you know? That NFTs are sort of like displayable in a central place. Like I you guess. Can have your little gallery of NFTs that you display. And so it's sort of like a status good. Whereas if you just had, you know, you were a member of some club
mm-hmm.
and maybe you could go to that club's website and like see your name. That doesn't have the appeal of something that you can display publicly in like whatever context you want.
But do people want their name displayed that shows that they paid for status at a club? I feel like you just want to be at the club.
Yes, I think people do want this. Like, for example, like Bored Apes, yeah. like people, the whole point is to flex your Bored Ape That's on your true. Twitter profile.
That's true.
Right. To include it as your Twitter profile.
Yeah. I guess this is just, it's just flex culture. I just don't get it. I don't get flexing culture.
Yep.
But I don't disrespect it. Like I have to say, like, honestly, I feel like that's the thing that people like give NFT people the most shit about. And I kind of, they're into what they're into, you know?
Yeah. I'm not into it, but I don't begrudge them their flex yeah, culture.
It was fine. Know? They yeah. were nice.
They were nice. It was a good time.
Yeah, so that was our time at NFT San Francisco. And just overall, I mean, the vibe... Well, okay, so this past week, there were two major San Francisco current events stories.
Mm-hmm.
The first is Elon buying Twitter,
yep.
rolling up and being like, everyone get the fuck out of here. I'm gonna... I don't even know what he's gonna do.
He's gonna run Twitter like it's a startup.
I guess.
Which is gonna be a shock to the pants of the geriatric... giant tech company that Twitter has become. Like yeah. imagine like you're some engineer at Twitter and for the past like 8 years you've just been coasting. Like nobody really cares. The company's right. making money. Like nothing is really connected to like performance or reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then Elon comes in and goes like, look, you need to work 12-hour days until we like ship this feature. Like
yeah.
he brought in employees from Tesla to make Twitter employees do code reviews with. He said that he wanted Twitter employees to print out all the code that they had written in the last 30 days and bring it to him to like review together.
That's
like, he's insane.
That's awesome. Honestly.
Yeah.
I have realized throughout this, I don't know when it happened. I don't know if it was him or if it was me, but I do find Elon hot now.
Oh, really? Interesting.
And I didn't before.
Huh?
And I don't, am I like, is it because of this? Does he like, did he get work done? Like,
no.
I don't know what it, but. Something about it is like
I think
doing
it's just
it for me
his
now.
Increased power and like and dynamism, you know. The charged eroticism of the pure
I don't think
capitalistic
it's power.
Power.
I don't think it's power because he has power. He's like the richest dude. Like mm-hmm. it's, I think it's that he doesn't give a fuck. Like he's just like coming in here and being like, I'm going to try this. Like he doesn't understand how like anything works. Like
I don't think he cares.
Exactly. That's what yeah. I mean. Like he really doesn't give a fuck. Like I don't think he bought Twitter to like make it profitable or even like a good company. I think he like bought Twitter because like he was kind of like, oh, I don't like that they're doing this, meaning like removing Trump from Twitter and being like, okay, maybe I could just go in and like make them not do that, you know?
I guess I kind of disagree. I think he like thinks Twitter is like kind of awful and is like, yeah. I've got to be able to do way better.
And he likes Twitter. He yeah. likes tweeting. He likes yeah. shit posting. So yeah. that's true. And that is how we all feel, I think. Like, I feel like everyone likes shit posting and they miss how Twitter used to feel. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, I feel like that's probably what it is me seeing Elon go in there and just like fuck it up. I'm mm-hmm. like, can it be worse than it is right now? Like no. probably not.
And Twitter's a company. It's kind of amazing how bad they are. Like yeah. they just, nothing works. It's kind mm-hmm. of weird. The spam problem is insane on crypto Twitter.
Yeah.
Every time I mention Bitcoin or like NFTs or whatever, I get dozens of like spam comments.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, and it's just, it's also an interesting chapter in, you know, the January 6th Trump being banned from Twitter story. Mm-hmm. Like that was January 2021. So that's a long ass time ago now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was like, that was, I think, the catalyst for like this whole like free speech, like Twitter, blah, blah, blah. I want Elon to come in and like bring Trump back. Like, mm-hmm. is Elon going to bring Trump back? You know,
I wonder. That would be wild. He might not do that just for the heat that it would bring to him.
But I kind of, I don't know why, but what heat? Like people want that.
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people don't want that.
Yeah,
a
but it doesn't people. Seem like Elon cares about those people.
True. Like, yeah, true. And from a numbers perspective, you want Twitter to do numbers like shit. Bring
exactly.
Trump back.
Exactly. No, I think he's going to bring Trump back.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, you're right. Like, I think it's like all of this is happening during eclipse season. So it's really hard to say like exactly what the fuck is going on. Just for the listeners, eclipse season is October 25th through November 8th.
What happens during eclipse season?
There's two eclipse, like there's like the lunar eclipse and the solar eclipse. And
do they usually happen together?
They do happen. They happen during like the same cycle because it has to do with like the way that the plane of the Earth's rotation is aligned with the plane of like Earth's like revolving around the sun.
Axial tilt.
Right. So the new and full moon of that cycle are both eclipses just because.
Wait,
the
which
moon
cycle?
Is,
what cycle?
Like. I just mean like the moon cycle is like every 28 days, uh-huh. right? So that's like one moon cycle. Then it has a new moon and a full moon.
Uh-huh.
And when Earth is like aligned correctly with the moon and the sun where they all line up, then both
right.
moon events, one of them is a lunar eclipse, which is when like the moon is a full moon and it's on the other side of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is a solar eclipse, which is when like the moon is on the sun side.
Right. So
Earth.
That 28 day period is eclipse season.
Well, it's like a 14 day. It's between the two basically.
Oh,
gotcha. So it's like half a, but like during, like between those two events, it's like, whoa, like obviously those are the two peaks, but mm-hmm. it's like, you know, both of those two chaotic events happen
yeah.
and it's every 6 months mm-hmm. pretty much. So I think actually we started the podcast during last eclipse season.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's been like 6 months of Hell Money Pod. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Happy,
congratulations
happy
to you too.
But yeah, eclipses are like supposed to be chaotic external events that like come in and change your situation. So there's nothing you can really do to avoid them. And that's also why like historically they're like thought to be like bad omens because it's like, it's generally not good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I don't think it has to be bad, but it is chaotic. So like Elon, yeah, I feel like Elon buying Twitter and all of this happening during eclipse season, I'm like, it's kind of yet to be, it
I wonder
feels
if that's
like,
why there was so much human feces on the streets of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
do you think it peaks around eclipse season?
That's like the next scientific, that's the next chapter of my PhD thesis.
Yeah.
Correlating human feces in San Francisco to moon events, you know? Yeah. I mean, I think that's partially why it felt so weird in San Francisco. Like just like fucking crazy out there.
What can we expect for Bitcoin during this, this eclipse season?
I don't know. I don't know that it's like particularly, I mean, I guess last eclipse season, when did like the bear market start? June-ish?
Maybe something like that.
Yeah. I feel like it's not super related to Bitcoin price. I think Bitcoin price is like more related to outer planet stuff, like Age of Aquarius ass shit.
And that makes sense. It's been really stable. It hasn't been going up and down on the order of, you know, the eclipse season.
Yeah. I feel like the eclipses have more to do with like like politics or like war or like create like events. Mm-hmm. Less so like Bitcoin price action is like kind of more of like a gradual process. Usually it happens like over a period of time. I feel like eclipses are more like Paul Pelosi getting attacked in his San Francisco home.
Mm, which we should also talk about.
Which we should also talk about because that also has to do with the San Francisco vibe check.
Paul Pelosi, is he related to somebody famous?
Someone we might know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nancy Pelosi's husband. Have you looked into this story at all?
No, I haven't.
I can't decide what I
try
think.
Not to pay attention to politics.
Well, it's like intrigue.
Yeah.
Like, but this isn't even really this is Paul Pelosi. He's not a politician.
So what happened? Paul Pelosi,
there was a 911 call and Paul Pelosi, I guess, called 911. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that's the story. I've heard like different things. But basically like some guy was attacking Paul Pelosi with a hammer in his San Francisco home. Mm-hmm. According to the official story, he was saying like, "Where's Nancy?" And so this is being framed as like this like MAGA guy who's like radicalized and like broke into their home and like attacked Paul Pelosi. Lots of people feel like that's bullshit.
Is there any evidence that it was some... Oh, the person who attacked had screamed, "Where's Nancy
Pelosi?" That's that. Yeah, that's the idea.
Okay, got it.
But like the guy, he lives in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. The guy who attacked Paul Pelosi, and he seems like a lib. Like he doesn't seem like a MAGA guy.
I mean, if you got an extreme lib, he probably hates establishment Democrats.
Totally, but yeah. That doesn't make you MAGA.
Oh yeah, totally.
You know, agreed.
Yeah, but right. Yep.
I know, but then other people are being like, "Oh no, this was actually like Paul Pelosi's gay lover, and they just had a lover's quarrel, and then
lover's quarrel where he hit him in the head with a hammer."
Yeah, and he called 911. I don't know. You know, it's like it's a whole fucking thing. But I think it's like both that story and the Elon Twitter story, I feel like speak to like the technocracy and like the chaos of the technocracy taking over from the gerontocracy. Cause it's like, as you were saying, like imagine you're just like some software engineer at Twitter that's just been coasting for like 8 years, just like being like, whatever, like, mm-hmm. I don't, you know, you don't really have to do anything. And then all of a sudden this like fucking meme lord comes in who's like the richest man in the world and just is like, "I'm just going to shake things up, you guys. Like, uh-huh. I'm just going to change everything." And like all of a sudden you're out of a job and it's like all this shit. Same situation, Paul Pelosi hanging out in his like Pac Heights home, just like vibing, and he gets like attacked by, you know, some internet radical, basically. Yeah. They feel like the same energy, like both stories.
Yeah, very eclipse season.
Very eclipse season. And I think the fact that like no one really knows what the true story is, like in the Paul Pelosi situation, it's like, did this person break in and he was attacked? Or like, is it some other, you know, not so great story for Paul Pelosi? And then with the Twitter thing, the fucking guys that were like outside pretending to be fired Twitter employees.
Yeah, that was really impressive. Rahul Ligma and Daniel Johnson, not their real names.
Ligma and Johnson.
Yeah, growing Daniel on Twitter. Pretty epic Twitter presence.
He is. He really is.
I don't even think he works at Twitter. He, when like the Twitter shakeup was happening, he got like a box full of junk and like just must have milled around outside of Twitter headquarters, like being a like guy getting fired.
Pretending to be a guy getting fired for journalists.
Until Fox News like talked to him and he just gives like this unhinged interview where he's like, "Yeah, I own a Tesla, but like, I don't know how I'm going to make payments on it. Like, sorry guys, I got to go. I need to check in with my husband and wife."
It's so awesome.
Yeah, I was impressed. I mean, that was some like legendary
king
shit.
That's genius. Yeah. But this is what I'm saying. Like we...
And he fed them the narrative that they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Like it's just all of this... It just feels like... Yeah, it's hyper-normalization vibes, which if you haven't seen the documentary, Hyper-Normalization, Adam Curtis, it's an essential watch. But yeah, it feels like all of these stories, it's like there's not even like a real like... solid fact-based, like there's no real perspective to take and be like, this is what happened. Like I know that like Elon's coming in and he's like firing X, Y, and Z and he's gonna bring Trump back, or like whatever the fuck the story is with Elon. Like literally nobody fucking knows. Elon probably doesn't even know. Paul Pelosi, who the fuck knows what happened to Paul Pelosi? Like we're never gonna know. Like I feel like with any of this, like I feel like the media cycle just like
It's pretty weird. I do feel like, yeah, nobody knows really what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Like all of like 2018 to 2022 was just like, wow, holy shit, one thing after another.
Literally.
Like, is it just going to be like that forever where shit is just wild on a monthly basis?
Well, this is why I always ask you, like, did it used to be like...
No, it was so simple before. The 90s, God, what a blessed simple time. Capitalism was just kind of ripping.
Yeah.
All was well in the world. We watched Jurassic Park, you know?
I feel like people were not happy in the 90s. What about like Kurt Cobain?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a few.
Wasn't there like a nihilism of the 90s? Like the 90s doesn't strike me as this like happy-go-lucky time. It strikes me as like a nihilistic sort of...
I was pretty miserable just because I was miserable when I was a kid. But a lot of people talk about the 90s as this like simple golden age where like everything kind of made sense and like the economy was doing good and we weren't... We were pretty far away from a bunch of like housing crises or like crazy economic crises. There weren't any economic crises during the 90s. Terrorism wasn't a big deal. You
Y2K
know?
Was looming though.
Y2K was looming. Yeah. And then Y2K happened and then like just stuff started popping off.
Are you a 90s kid? Like by definition?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I was born in 83. So, you know, the oldest I was during the 80s was 7. So
really you are like a 90s kid
for sure.
Do you think that that's the best, like, do you think you had the best like time to be alive?
Hard for me to say because I was just miserable. I was miserable and depressed. Yeah, nothing about the 90s seemed particularly good.
What's been the best time to be alive so far in your life?
Probably when I studied abroad in Sweden and like all I was doing was practicing Swedish, like trying to learn Swedish and partying. And it was this really interesting combination of I'm not really much of a partier, but there I was partying and it had this incredible like intellectual challenge to it because
you were trying to speak Swedish.
Yeah. I would go out and try to speak Swedish and it was like a huge challenge to like remember words. And like every time I interacted with somebody, I would learn a word. I would learn like a new way to say something. Mm. And so it gave just partying with a bunch of Swedes this incredible like additional layer to it.
Yeah. And you've used that for the rest of your life. Like I can't even count how many times you've like, fun fact, did you know that blah 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 in Swedish is...
I feel like that's actually incredibly annoying,
but it is a big part of your personality.
It is, yeah, a big part of my personality.
What's the fucking elbow one where you hit your funny
when you hit your funny bone, that's called the widow shock.
That's one of the best Tell Money podcast moments.
Could be, yeah. we'll play a clip from the archives right now.
No, actually, the theme of this episode is you have to go back through the archives yourself.
Okay,
You want any of these moments. Yeah, I did actually have a note, is now the best time to be alive, because I was thinking about it.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like in a lot of ways, our material conditions keep getting better and better, more or less. Mm-hmm. Technology keeps getting better and better. But... And this is really gonna sound like taking a page from the book of Aaron, but like spiritually, right? Mm-hmm. Ooh, I don't know. It seems like people are very anxious. A lot of the narratives are really bad. We're sort of in crisis. These crises that we create, you know, like these like political crises, economic crises, environmental crises. Not that that's fully, you know, man created, but we're very much swept
we're
in the
swept
drama
up
of
by
that.
It.
Yeah.
I've been reading Culture of Narcissism by Christopher Lash. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it was written in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Oh, are you checking?
Yeah. We're about 45 minutes in.
Nice.
There you go.
It was written in the 70s. And it was like, people like point to it now just being like, wow, it like really predicted our time. Kind of like Sovereign Individual vibes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But basically his kind of point, and he's not like being like, a lot of conservatives kind of point to him as being like, look, like he was right, but he's not really a conservative. Mm-hmm. But his kind of thing is like the degradation of like family values and community over like the course of the 60s into the 70s has led to a culture of narcissism where all anyone has is themselves. Mm. And like that hasn't created like a rugged individual that like goes out and like does what they want. It's created like a bottomless pit that doesn't know how to find meaning or like looks to things like therapists to tell them like how to live their lives because they don't have like family to do that or like culture to like kind of give them a path. Mm-hmm. And so they like hyper intellectualize like and therapize like everything. And they also have to like, he also says like this creates the political drama, because like for the narcissist, everything that happens external to the narcissist is like furthering the narcissist's plot. Mm-hmm. And so like all of these like political events or like media stories like contribute to the narcissist's like formation of self. And so we become obsessed with like apocalyptic narratives and like things that create meaning or like rage or like intense emotions in our life, because mm-hmm. we like don't have a base outside of ourselves with which to like learn to value ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, and he says like, yeah, like the '70s was like the decade that this happened. And then like going in, you know, obviously it's just gotten worse.
What happened in the '70s? What does he think set it off?
Well, so like the '50s was like the family, right? That was like very like suburban home, like mom, stay at home mom vibes. And then the '60s was kind of like this retaliation, but it was very political. It was mm-hmm. very like much about movements. But then the disillusionment that happened from the '60s into the '70s was like when people realized like maybe we can't change things politically, and so they just retreated into like the self and like making politics or like those sort of like social justice movements more of like an identity rather than like a thing that you are like pushing forward and contributing right. to.
Interesting.
So the '70s was like, it's like called like the decade of me, where like people started creating like political rebelliousness as like a style or like an identity rather than being like I'm contributing to this movement mm-hmm. and like who I am is sort of separate from that mm-hmm. but rather being like, you know, whatever things in the bio that like
yeah.
say like your political affiliation and that defines you.
If you, I mean, I don't know if this is true just because I don't know enough about it, mm-hmm. but if you told me that something like this was true, that like, oh yeah, back in the 60s or 70s, we made a few wrong choices in how society's organized, and now the chickens are coming home to roost and it's the source of a lot of our problems. I'd be like, yeah.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a well-written book too. It's just, I think it's like, it's satisfying to read it now. I mean, mm-hmm. again, it has Sovereign Individual vibes because it's like satisfying to read it now and see like, mm-hmm. like he couldn't have predicted like reality TV yeah. or social media, which are like
it is true
exemplifying
that, yeah.
of that for sure.
Family structure has changed enormously. Yeah. And I'm not somebody who's like, oh my God, you know, the family being torn apart. But like, it is true that like, you know, people are having fewer children. People are having children later. It's not as like normal and expected. I feel like mm-hmm. it was pretty normal to have kids in your 20s. You know, that was totally normal. That's just what people did. Mm-hmm. And now obviously people can like, you know, it's much easier to control your fertility as a couple.
Right.
And not that that's obviously, that's probably in and of itself a good thing, mm-hmm. but I could imagine that that has knock-on effects. You know, people are forming families later. It's not as expected. It's not as normal.
Yeah.
They're spending more time alone or not really, you know, in service to something sort of larger and real.
Well, right? What is larger, you know, like without family, culture, and religion, like
right.
what is larger and more real than just like whatever the fuck is booping around in your brain?
Yeah. I mean, this is something, you know, that I struggle with like all the time. I mean, like for me, like, yeah, like the thing that is booping around in my brain is kind of the thing that's most important to me.
You're like ordinals. You
know? Ordinals. Yeah, literally. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like my strat for coping with reality is like, I find something to get really obsessed with.
Yeah.
And if you ask me, like, oh, are ordinals meaningful in some sort of grand sense? Or like, is Bitcoin meaningful in some sort of grand sense? I'm like, well, no, it's just kind of what I'm obsessed with at the moment. Actually, yeah. although I don't know, Bitcoin ties into a lot of my, like, even though I'm not a religious person, I have a lot of ideas. I have sort of like pretty strong value system.
Yeah.
Like what I think is good and what I think is bad.
What do you think that's based on? Just like feel?
Like hating, kind of hating authority.
So it's a fear-based
No, mentality. It's not fear. It's not fear, Casey said defensively. No, it's like I've just always hated authority. Mm-hmm. Whenever anybody has tried to like exert control over me in a way that I didn't appreciate, or I have seen somebody else having control taken away from them, I've had an extremely negative, visceral reaction to right. that. I basically have never thought that any kind of authority was justified whatsoever. In my hardcore, like 13 to like 17 year old, like
the 90s.
Atheist period. Yeah. Casey, 90s atheist.
90s kid Casey.
Yeah. I remember I would be like, yeah, if I died and there was a God, like the first thing I'd ask him was, what makes you right? Like that kind of goes with like everything.
Boo.
Boo. But yeah, like I just hate authority. And so mm-hmm. the things that I value are freedom and not being under the jackboot of some thug, right? And so that's why I like Bitcoin a lot. Because
but then, it is like freedom for what, right? Like, it's like, that is still like an anti-argument. It's like, once you're free, then like, what's the meaning?
That's the thing is, that's the thing is, I think people do their best figuring when they're free. They do the best things when they're free. And it doesn't need to be anything in particular. Like, I've confidence that when people are free, they do useful, good, interesting things.
I sort of idealistically agree with you, but I think like, I feel like having framework is, it might be a cope, but I think it seems apparent to me that having faith of some kind is like intrinsic to humans. Not that every individual human has faith or needs it to survive, but like, when you look at history, it's not like there's like historical societies where they're like, yeah, God's just, we don't really know, every society throughout all of history is like, no, we know, what God is. Well, and I don't know if that's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a good thing,
just
but
that it's the way people are.
Yeah. It's like, I think what's interesting to me about like the dissolution of the family, the dissolution of religion, the dissolution of culture, like particularly in America or like Western societies, whatever, is like, it feels like this is the first time that this is being tried. And I don't know. I mean, like, whatever, like communism, I guess, was technically like an atheist society, but that was like top down approach.
Yeah. Very coerced.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do think frameworks, I do think values, I do think all that stuff is super valuable. Mm-hmm. And I think that people come up with the best frameworks and values when they're not being coerced. People who are not being coerced when they're free will find something to care about.
So this is what I'm wondering is like, is what will people arrive on? Like right now, like religion, yeah, like these structures that like, I mean, I would say like it is like a lot of religion and family like is coercive, like not saying that it doesn't add value to your life or like meaning to be like a part of a religious organization or a family or that you can't genuinely believe it. But it feels like the reason why people are moving away from those things is not, it's like because they don't believe it anymore. And I wonder if that is like a blip and something else will take hold, like fucking astrology or something insane like that. Or if like we actually will be moving forward as like a more atheist society.
I don't think so. I think people just kind of like have some sort of like object of devotion and they just swap it out for one thing or another.
So what, science?
I describe it as scientism, which is not actually real science. When I talk to people who would describe themselves as like progressives and know the science and that's what they believe in, they have very little idea about science whatsoever. Yeah, they have no idea what science is. They have no idea what science does. They have no idea what the crises within science are.
Yeah.
Like the replication crisis in a lot of psychology and medicine. Like, how can you really like believe in science if 60% of psychology papers like don't replicate?
I know.
Right? Like, so they're just clueless. They've just swapped one religion for another. I think it's people need that like object of veneration or need some really black and white value system.
Yeah.
And so they're just plugging in, oh, well, I guess, we have telescopes and we can't see God in the heavens. So
he ain't there.
He ain't there.
But the Big Bang is.
Yeah. Yeah. So just replacing it with something. Yeah.
And this is something I talk about a lot with like, my science, my woke science friends, meaning like woke in like a real way, like they're awakened within science is like, there's no one who's more aggressive about science being real than people who have no fucking idea about and don't work in science. Yeah. Like when you work in science, you're like, whoa, like there's a lot of issues
it's
here.
It's a mess. Incentives are terrible.
And that doesn't mean that like empirical reasoning is like dead or not useful or that like having some sort of like consensus scientifically really is not valuable, but like
it has to do with the institutions that
exactly
do
science. It's a lot weaker than I think people realize, but it's like, as you said, I agree with you. I think people seem to need something. Mm-hmm. So like what happens like as the institution, like I feel like what happened was like people moved away from religion, family and culture, and then they moved into science. And like what happens as like science becomes more broken? Obviously there's some people that will just
continue to believe in it.
Of course they'll do the super crazy Christian thing, like that every tale as old as time, religious fanatics, like obviously. But like what about like people like you,
maybe
what about people
maybe I'll become a Sikh.
A Sikh.
Yeah, I went to a Gurdwara a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Which is like a Sikh worship hall. Mm-hmm. And they have something called langar. Like every Sikh gurdwara has langar, which means kitchen. Mm-hmm. And they just serve people food. It was very chill. It was really chill. I was like, yeah, I can vibe with this.
I feel like you are exploring your spirituality in like a non-religious, faith-based way.
Yeah, well, I enjoy...
Like you're getting your like Orthodox Jew lessons.
Yeah. I mean, I just, I enjoy, like kind of anything that is above a certain level of complexity, I think is interesting.
Right.
And
like partying with the Swedes.
Parting with the Swedes, religious traditions, weird subcultures. Mm-hmm. And so the weird like traditions of religion are really interesting to
yeah.
me. Like, well, okay, they believe this. That's not true, but I don't care that it's not true. I'm interested in why that belief came to be and why it persists and et cetera.
Yeah. So maybe you'll just continue exploring and then you will find something that speaks to you. Or maybe you'll just be a searcher for your whole life.
I think I'll just be a searcher.
Yeah.
I wish I could, your cross to bear. I would love to really go whole hog on
like
religion.
A spiritual
yeah,
awakening.
Have a spiritual awakening, be like, guys, I found God.
I don't think it'd be good for you.
I don't know. Hopefully it'd be some sort of God that was like compatible with Bitcoin, you know, that would, I could still be fully obsessed with Bitcoin, but could just be a little bit more sure that there was some kind of afterlife that was like good. You know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't mind. Like, I feel like people who are not like spiritually connected, I'm just kind of like, maybe that's just your thing to do in this life. Like, you know, like you just got to figure out other things. Mm-hmm. Like there's stuff I can't do because I'm just like too lost in the sauce of like my own like stupid little stories that I tell myself about how reality works. Mm. But I also think there's like deeper truths that I see as a result, you know, it takes all kinds.
Yeah.
Like I sort of feel like we're in like a chaotic kind of like reconfiguring.
I feel like some sort of liminal transitory period
totally.
Where things are reconfiguring. Yeah. I also think it's eclipse season.
Yeah.
Well, just in the broader arc of like human development, I think that probably we're going to get into a post-evolution world pretty soon.
Right.
In terms of our own development, where instead of natural selection, like guiding the evolution of humans, mm-hmm. we're going to start doing some like intentional, like genetic
transhumanism.
Engineering. Yeah. Not even really just transhumanism. I mean, just like sort of, you know, selecting against variants that cause disease, selecting for genetic variants that have certain like beneficial properties.
Yeah.
Like we're going to do a lot of that. And because evolution operates so slowly, even if we do a little bit of that, we will be in a post-evolution world, right?
Well, we're just I mean, I just feel like everything is like accelerating so fast right now, whether it's like technologically or like, yeah, as you said, like evolutionarily.
Yeah.
Like these things, or like, you know, climate change even is like an example where
yeah.
it's like,
yeah.
this isn't supposed to happen
I'd
so fast.
I'd be so bummed if you put me into a time machine and you sent me like 200 years into the future and it was basically the same, you know? Like if things hadn't really changed very much,
yeah.
that'd just be lame as hell.
There's no way.
I hope so. I feel like as far as science goes, like, so I think one of the reasons that science is so fucked up mm-hmm. is we really picked a lot of low hanging fruit between 1920 and 1980.
Yeah.
And like even post 1980, like a lot of it is kind of just like really exploiting the things that we figured out. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, microchips came in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
Like when, I don't know when the first microchips were made, but like, yeah, they were definitely around. Yeah, no, the 70s. Yeah, we had 60s and 70s, we had computers. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know if we had microchips. I'm sure, yeah, the PDPs were microchips. So yeah, I think we had microchips in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. But so a lot of that technological, what we would describe as the technological digital electronics revolution of the last, you know, 40 years mm-hmm. Is actually just exploiting this like one niche that we found a while ago.
Yeah, and this is one of my like this is one of my critiques of science that's like not a problem with science. It's just sort of like a thing that yeah. I think is happening is exactly this, where it's like I think there are a lot of like older scientists, like academics that actually have done really great work. Like they're not frauds or phonies or like mm-hmm. idiots. They've had a respectable career, but I think the things that they discovered or invented or whatever, like it's not as easy to do that anymore because we've kind yeah. of run, as you said, we've run out of the low hanging fruit
yeah.
and like, but the way that the academic model works is you're just supposed to create like a million more of yourself.
Especially, this must be really hard in your field in,
there's nothing left to
astronomy,
yeah.
which is like, that's picked clean.
Yeah.
Like we can't because we're really just like, yeah, like there are photons and radio waves. There's like electromagnetic radiation hitting Earth. And all we can do is just like observe that electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah.
We can't like teleport to another planet and do like science experiments.
No, we can't.
There.
And we can't go back in time and see how things used to be. We have like one data point effectively. And it's like right now, and it's like a blip.
Yeah.
And it's also falling apart. The whole thing is falling apart at the seams. You know?
How so?
Just like a strong, you know, like dark matter and the Big Bang Theory and all these kind of things. It's just like, we're just, the more we learn, the more that we're like, oh, maybe we just had this like very simple, like, convenient assumption that helped us create these models that like actually might not be legit at all.
Dark matter in particular is like sad. They're like, so this equation doesn't balance.
Yeah.
So let's just add this extra, the fudge factor. It should literally be called the fudge factor.
Fudge factor that's literally like 99.999%.
Yeah. And if that wasn't enough, then there's also dark energy where they're like, oh, well, there's a fudge factor for energy and mass.
Yeah. No, it's really, but this is what made me think of like the, what is like atheism look like, is atheism a blip, and like what happens like to a true atheist like as science falls apart, like, because I wonder,
it took a lot of the time to develop the like really baroque complexity of traditional religions, and so maybe we're just in the incipient phase of this like scientism, like worship, this like science and political sort of like conglomerate that people believe in. And that in, you know, thousands of years, we'll have incredibly crazy...
We'll have lore.
Lore. Yeah.
I guess you could also, like, I feel like if you compare it to, like, you know, the, like, major religion revolution and then, like, the Enlightenment happening after that, like, that first being, like, religion, the second being, like, scientific reasoning or, like, science, that, like, by the time the Enlightenment happened, people were, like, you know, kind of pissed at religion and they were just sort of like, ugh, this is, like... restrictive, and like you kind of have to like do all these fudge things to like make it work, like the earth can't revolve around the sun or like whatever, that type of shit. And maybe we're just like at that next stage with science where like now science is the version of that where they're like, well, no, it's dark energy and it has to be dark energy because like that's what we've decided for like these decades, and like that I don't know, that then there will be like this new thing that comes in that's maybe like...
I think there'll be a chaotic falling apart of academia. I think basically like...
I hope so.
Academia
they deserve
is
it.
Pretty... Academia is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Seems like it's getting worse, but we really haven't changed our appetite for funding it and our appetite for considering it high status.
Yeah.
And if things keep going for like another like 40 years this way, I feel like it's heading towards a reckoning.
Yeah. This is actually something I was talking about with my mom today that I thought you would like is... I was talking about Moore's Law with her, which is, you know, whatever. It's just the idea that like computer processing chips get smaller and smaller on some rate over time. And like Moore's Law is not like an actual scientific law. It's an observational law, right? Like it's just someone was like, the IBM guy was like, oh, like it just seems like these things get smaller. And like it has consistently been that way for like decades, like since he made that observation. And I asked her, I was like, why do you think that it follows? Like, why do you think Moore's Law is valid? Like, why do you think that that actually works? And she was like, I think because it's such a competitive impulse in like the computer, like the companies that make these things or that research these things, that there's so much pressure to stay on Moore's Law and to be like, our company is on the cutting edge of Moore's Law, that it creates this like incentive system that like lasts forever and like will just keep accelerating. Like it's not that like Moore's Law is like even necessarily real. It's just that like if everyone decides that it's real, then there's so much attention and energy put into making it real.
Right.
And like for contrast, like NASA, I feel like the problem with NASA, this is not an idea that's mine. It's something I heard from someone else, but feels very true, is like in the 60s and 70s, NASA was like, or mostly 60s, was told what to do by the government. Like the government was like, put someone on the fucking moon. We need to beat the Soviets. Mm-hmm. And NASA was like, okay. And they put someone on the moon.
Right.
But now NASA is completely politically undefined. NASA makes its own rules and its own like decisions about things. And so it's, the way it works is it's a bunch of scientists come together and they're like, okay, what seems reasonable for us to do over the next decade, given this money that we know we're going to get from the government to do it? And then like the scientists are like, well, I feel like I could discover this molecule on Enceladus maybe in the next 10 years, rather than be like, we're going to fucking find aliens in the next 10 years or you're getting your funding fucking cut. Yeah. You know, it's like, just, I agree with you. Like, I think recreating the way that we fund science, free marketing the fuck out of science, maybe, is like a way to, I don't know, figure out what's like actually worthwhile and what's not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've really meandered this.
Yeah. Well, I think like, I mean, The last thing on our list, I think, really brings it together, right? William Shatner goes to space on a private Amazon rocket.
Blue Origin rocket, yeah.
Blue Origin rocket with Jeff Bezos. And he's up there, and all he says is, "Space filled me with overwhelming sadness."
He literally said it felt like a funeral. Like, he said he just looked out and it looked like death.
I think maybe we should cut the episode right at that point.
What?
Like, space filled me with overwhelming sadness. No outro.
And then just...
just cut. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it'll be good.
Yeah, and just have like...
yep, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
If we wanted to really ham it up, we would fade in... that song, What a Wonderful World.
Yeah. Okay. I'll see what feels right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right. We did it.
Let's do it. Yeah.
That was a good episode.
Yeah.